So this is prose rather than poetry, so I'm just going to read and then we'll do the word by word. It's possibly. Pratihat suvar chalayam pratihar tradayastraya asanisha kovitaha sunava pratihartu stutyam maja bumanao ajanishatam. So you can repeat. Pratihat. From King Pratiha. Suvar Chalayam. In the womb of his wife named Suvar Chala. Pratihartri Adiyagatriya. The three sons, Pratiharta, Prastota, and Udghata. Asan came into being. Vijakovitaha, who were all very expert in the ritualistic ceremonies of the Vedas. Sunavaha, sons. Pratihartuhu, Pratiharta. Stutyam, in the womb of Stuti, his wife. Aja Bhumanao, the two sons Aja and Bhuma. Ajanishatam were brought into existence. Translation, in the womb of his wife, Suvarchala, Pratiha begot three sons named Pratiharta, Prastuta, and Udgata. These three sons were very expert in performing Vedic rituals. Pratiharta begot two sons named Aja and Bhuma. In the wife of his wife named Stuti. So there's no purport to this text, so we'll read the next text. Okay. Bhumnath Rishikulyayam Udgithastata Prastavo Deva Kulyayam Prastavan Niyutsayam Hridayaja Asid vibhur vibhuratyam cha prithusenastasman nakta gakutyam jagne naktad drutiputro gaya rajasi pravara udara shava jayata sapshad bhagavato vishnu jagat ri rakshishya Rihita Satvasya Kalat Mavata Kalat Mavatvari Lakshanena Maha Purushatam Praptaha. Okay, translation. In the womb of his wife, Rishikurya, King Bhuma begot a son named Udgita. From Udgita's wife, Devakulya, a son named Pratithava was born, and Prastava begot a son named Vibhu through his wife, Niyuktsa. In the womb of his wife, Rati, Vibhu got a son named Pritushena. Pritushena begot a son named Nakta. In the womb of his wife, named Akuti. Nakta's wife was Druti. And from her womb, the great King Gaya was born. Gaya was very famous and pious. He was the best of saintly kings. Lord Vishnu and his expansions, who are meant to protect the universe, are always situated in the transcendental mode of goodness, known as Vishuddha Sattva. Being a direct expansion of Lord Vishnu, King Gaya was also situated in the Vishuddha Sattva. Because of this, Maharaj Gaya was fully equipped with transcendental knowledge, therefore he was called Maha Purusha. So purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. From this verse it appears that the incarnations of God are various. Some are part and parcel of the direct expansions, and some are direct expansions of Lord Vishnu. A direct incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called Angsha or Shamsha, whereas an incarnation from Amsha is called Kala. Among the Kalas, there are the Vivinamsha Jivas, or living entities. These are counted among the Jiva Tattvas. Those who directly come from Lord Vishnu are called Vishnu Tattvas, and sometimes designated as Mahapurusha. Another name for Krishna is Mahapurusha, and a devotee is sometimes called Mahapurushika. So I'll just read the next text. With its purport, one text. Savaiswadharmena prajapadana poshana aprindanno palalana nushasana lakshane ne jadina cha bhagavat ti mahapurushe paravare brahmani sarvatmanarpita paramarta lakshanena brahmavich acharananu sevaya parita bhagavat bhakti yogena chavik shnashaha paribhavitati shuramatir uparatanatmya atmane swayam upalabhyamana brahmatmanubhavaupi niravimana evavanim ajugupat. So translation, King Gaya gave full protection and security to the citizens so that their personal property would not be disturbed by undesirable elements. He also saw that there was sufficient food to feed all the citizens. This is called poshana. He would sometimes distribute gifts to the citizens to satisfy them. This is called prinana. He would sometimes call meetings and satisfy the citizens with sweet words. This is called upalalana. He would also give them good instructions on how to become first-class citizens. This is called anushasana. Such were the characteristics of King Gaya's royal order. Besides all this, King Gaya was a householder who strictly observed the rules and regulations of household life. He performed sacrifices and was an unalloyed pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was called Mahapurusha because as a king, he gave the citizens all facilities, and as a householder, he executed all his duties so that at the end he became a strict devotee of the Supreme Lord. As a devotee, he was always ready to give respect to other devotees and to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. This is the bhakti yoga process. Due to all these transcendental activities, King Gaya was always free from the bodily conception. He was full in Brahman realization, and consequently he was always jubilant. He did not experience material lamentation. Although he was perfect in all respects, he was not proud, nor was he anxious to rule the kingdom. So purport by Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, when he descends on earth, he has two types of business: to give protection to the faithful and annihilate the demons. Ritranaya sarunam vidushaya cha dushvatam. Since the king is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is sometimes called Nara Deva. That is, the Lord as a human being. According to the Vedic injunctions, he is worshipped as God on the material platform. As a representative of the Supreme Lord, the king has the duty to protect the citizens in a perfect way so that they would not be anxious for food and protection, and so that they would be jubilant. The king would supply everything for their benefit, and because of this, he would levy taxes. If the king or government otherwise levies taxes on the citizens, he becomes responsible for the sinful activities of the citizens. In Kali Yuga, monarchy is abolished because the kings themselves are subjected to the influence of Kali Yuga. It is understood from the Ramayana that when Vibhishan became friends with Lord Ramchandra, he promised that if by chance or will he broke the laws of friendship with Lord Ramachandra, he would become a Brahmin or a king in Kali Yuga. In this age, as Vibhishana indicated, both Brahmanas and kings are in a wretched condition. Actually, there are no kings or Brahmanas in this age, and due to their absence, the whole world is in a chaotic condition and is always in distress. Compared to present standards, Maharaj Gaya was a true representative of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, he was known as Maha Purusha. So Om Gada Timbadandasha Gananjana Shadakaya Chakshunan Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So as Prabhupada states in the Krishna book, when the Lord appears in this world, he comes in one of two dynasties, the Surya Vamsa and the Soma Vamsa. That is the Sun Dynasty and the Moon Dynasty. So we have Lord Ramchandra, for example, who is a descendant of Vibhaswan. That is the Sun Dynasty. And it's interesting in this story from the Ramayana that even Vibhaswan was worshipping Sita and Ram deities. Prabhupada tells a story that Vibhaswan was worshipping Sita and Ram deities long before Lord Rama appeared. Of course, the pastimes of the Lord are eternal. They're Nitya Leela. So even before Lord Rama appeared, Lord Rama had performed pastimes in some other universe, in some other yuga. It's like we know once in the day of Lord Brahma. Lord Rama appears, Krishna appears, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears. So Lord Rama's pastimes were known to Vibhaswan. And therefore he was worshipping Sita and Ram Didis. Those Sita and Ram Didis were passed down, Vibhaswan, Manave, Praha, Manurikshvakave, Bravet, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, through his particular disciplic succession. And even those deities, Sita and Ram, were given to Lord Ramchandra. And Lord Ramchandra kept them in a closet, because he didn't want to worship himself. And eventually he gave them to that Brahmin. And we've told the story before, the Brahmin who would not eat until he saw Lord Ramchandra that day. And he wanted that Brahmin to eat regularly. Prabhupada told that story. And those deities were eventually given to Hanuman. And eventually they were passed down through the disciplic succession, given to Shripad Madhvacharya. And they're still there in Udupi today. You can still see those particular deities. So anyway, so Lord Rama appeared in the Surya Vamsa, and then of course you have Krishna appear in the Soma or the Moon Dynasty. So these are the two general dynasties. And these are dynasties of Kshatriyas. That is those who have responsibility over particular kingdoms. Of course, Vibhaswan, he has big responsibility. I was just hearing in the Ramayana yesterday how when Lord Ram was fighting Ravana, and Lord Ram kept cutting off all the heads of Ravana and they kept growing back. It's described in the Valmiki Ramayana. He cut off 100 times the heads of Lord Ram, and 100 heads just kept growing back, and Lord Ram didn't know what to do. And then Agastya Muni appeared before Lord Ram, and he gave him the I forget the exact Sanskrit name, but the Surya Mantra, whereby he could kill Ravana. Ridaya, something like this. I forget the exact Sanskrit for that. But anyway, he gave him this mantra, and then Lord Ram was able to shoot Ravana in the chest. Actually, it's interesting how the stories in the Ramayana are told differently in different Ramayans. You know, you have the Tulsidas Ramayana, and then you have the film, which is sort of an amalgamation of all the different Ramayans. And so it's hard to figure out what's true and what's not true, because in the film they show Lord Ram hitting Ravana in the belly button. That's where he supposed to have kept his nectar or something like that. But in the Valmiki Ramayana, which Prabhupada said is the authorized bona fide Ramayana, you have Lord Ram hitting him in the chest with this Brahmastra. Actually, Brahmastra, he didn't hit him with the sun thing, but he chanted the sun mantra to become very powerful before he hit Ravana in the chest. So you have these two dynasties of Kshatriyas, and the point about Kshatriyas, of course, the word Kshatriya means to protect those citizens or those under your jurisdiction from harm. It doesn't mean someone who simply likes to fight. I mean, there's plenty of Shudras who like to fight, just like you see Shudras, they get drunk and then they fight in the bar. It's a very common scenario. That doesn't mean that they're Kshatriyas. So Kshatriya, he really wants to protect, and he, as Prabhupada comments, that he feels that everyone under his jurisdiction is like his son or daughter, Praja. Prabhupada makes that point in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Praja means those who are born, basically. And Prabhupada makes the point not only in regard to human beings, but he has that particular mood of affection. It's not simply that he takes it as his duty, but he actually considers that all living entities, you know, animals, plants, and all the jiva souls in his kingdom, they're actually like his children. It's also interesting that Prabhupada said that's the principle and ideal household life, too. That one considers, of course, not the whole kingdom if one's a householder, but one, even the bugs in one's house. That's an interesting statement, because sometimes people want to kill all the bugs in one's house. They call for some exterminator to come and kill all the bugs. But actually, Prabhupada said even the household animals and the whatever creatures there, one actually considers them like their children. Of course, I mean, obviously you don't go buy toys for the bugs like you would for the children. But, you know, this is like a really important concept, because generally in the bodily conception of life, of course, our body is the most important, and things related to the body, you know, pum sostri amituni bhamritam, etc., things related to the body are considered ours. You know, we have these two conceptions of false ego, I and mine. You know, mine, you know, because this is me, and mine is everything related to the body. You know, my wife, my children, my car, all these things like that. Of course, Krishna is very kind to his devotees. Sometimes he puts them in difficulties, so they realize, first of all, they're not the body, and then the things related to the body are not really theirs. You see sometimes great devotees, like I was talking, Mother Tulsi is a great devotee, but I was talking to Mother Tulsi last night, who has MS, and I was explaining that you should see this as Krishna's mercy upon you. He is basically teaching you that the thing that everyone else is attached to, this body, is actually not yours, is not you, and you can't manipulate it. And he says, whereas other people are not as fortunate as you, they're actually experiencing good health, and they're, you know, just like myself, I exercise and everything like that, and I'm so proud of this body. And I said, of course, I don't want to have illness, of course, but still, we should see if something like that happens, it's actually Krishna's mercy trying to, if it's not under your control. Of course, if you do something, you eat improperly and you get sick, you can't say it's Krishna's mercy. Just like Prabhupada said, when people, devotees died because they fell asleep driving a car in the middle of the night, Prabhupada said, it wasn't Krishna's mercy, Prabhupada said it was their foolishness to drive at that particular point. And Prabhupada was very strict that if you're going to drive at night, you shouldn't drive an hour past your normal bedtime. You should get 7 or 8 hours of sleep at night if you're going to be driving like this constantly during the day. So there's certain things that we have to take responsibility for. But in any case, we have this body and things associated with this body we become very attached to. So it's an important lesson for householders and also for people who are kings or in charge of other people to consider everybody to be like their praja. Because this takes them off the bodily platform. Because normally the son or the daughter is a special attachment to that particular individual. But that's because of the body. And so considering everyone to be equal, everyone who is not connected to the body, actually helps one develop a higher standard of consciousness. So the king was supposed to have that consciousness. Of course, as Prabhupada comments here, in Kali Yuga, they don't have that consciousness. They're just interested. Like we see Saddam Hussein, for example, who was deposed a number of years ago. He had acquired a vast amount of wealth to enjoy his kingdom. He was like a king, I guess, even though in name he wasn't a king. So a vast amount of wealth, and then there was all sorts of nepotism going on. Does anyone know what nepotism is? Nepotism means people who are either your family or friends, you give them positions in government. You find this very, very common in governments in the Middle East. I mean, for example, in Saudi Arabia, practically everybody, the ruling people, they're actually practically all related to each other. This is one thing. And then even those who are come in to work in Saudi Arabia or later even get to be citizens in Saudi Arabia, they're not even allowed to vote. It's just a really nepotic or a nepotistic system in Saudi Arabia. So let's talk about Lord Ram, how he exhibited this principle of considering all the citizens to be just as important as his own family. And he exhibited this in a very heavy pastime. Of course, that's the pastime when he sent Sita Devi away. Lord Ram was extremely attached to Sita. Sita Devi is the goddess of fortune. I mean, she's Lakshmi. And Lord Ram is Narayan. You know, imagine Narayan sending Lakshmi away. I mean, that's the love that Lord Ram felt for Sita and Sita felt for Ram cannot even be described in words. It was so deep. I mean, Sita never thought of anyone else other than Ram, and Ram never thought of anyone else other than Sita. Sita was so devoted to Lord Ram that when she was in the ashram of Valmiki Muni, and she was given the test to sort of like go over this lake, the Shivi Shagara, without getting wet, she was able to fly over like an 80-mile lake without getting wet. I mean, she was so chaste. Incredibly chaste. And of course, even at the end, when she said, you know, if I have always been attached and thinking only of Lord Ram, let the earth open up and take me. I mean, and then because of that great chastity, even the earth opened up and Bhumi took Sita Devi back. So when Lord Ram was confronted with the knowledge that his citizens, some of the citizens, not even all the citizens, I would say the vast majority were not displeased, but that some of the citizens were actually displeased with him. And not only were they criticizing, but they felt, here's the essence of the thing, it wasn't just that they were criticizing, but they felt that he had set a bad example. Because one of the king's duties is not only to act properly, but to act as setting a good example, rather so that yadyada charati shrestas tatari vetro janaha. So they felt that he had set a bad example for their wives. Basically, that was the consciousness. Because, obviously, people would follow what the king did, and people would follow the example of Sita Devi. And their wives would sometimes use the excuse, like Sita Devi, she went over to someone's house, you know, probably for almost a year. She was in someone's house, and Lord Ram accepted her back. So they would use that excuse to be independent. And it's interesting, even though there was no fault in Sita Devi's part, there could be fault on certain citizens' parts who would copy Sita Devi, because they weren't chaste like Sita Devi. So it wasn't just the reputation, although that's what generally is stressed when you hear about that particular pastime. Lord Ram was concerned that people would respect him, and without the respect of people, he wouldn't be able to rule the kingdom properly. But it was if people would follow that example. Like, it's very important when one has a position that even if one is not at fault, that one bend over backwards to set a good example. And we see that Lord Chaitanya did that in the case of Junior Haridas. You know, Junior Haridas made, very little mistake. I mean, practically. I can't even figure out the mistake he made, almost. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu treated him so heavily in that regard. And the commentators, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others, and Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur commented on that verse, said that if Lord Chaitanya hadn't done that, then people would take that as an excuse and mix unrestrictedly between men and women. Because when a leader does a little thing, people will take a mile. As they say, you give them an inch, they take a mile. I mean, like the typical example that I have mentioned many times of how when Prabhupada drank 7-Up, the devotees would, when they saw that Prabhupada drank 7-Up a few times and he said refreshing, the devotees would have, practically speaking, whole trucks of 7-Up delivered to the temple in New York. So it's just like one little thing, Prabhupada did this, boom, the devotees just take it as an excuse to enjoy their senses. There's certain things, like Prabhupada even took snuff for his health. You know what snuff is? Snuff is like this sort of tobacco substance. He took it for his health. I mean, Sri Kirti talks about that. But it's not that we should be taking snuff. Not that people should come to the temple with their little snuff pack and taking snuff. I mean, Prabhupada did it for his health. Or sometimes devotees, if they have high blood pressure, they may take a little garlic or something like that just for their health. It's not that people should imitate that. So one in a position has to be very, very careful not to give the wrong impression, even though he or she may not be at fault. So that was really Lord Ram's consideration, not simply reputation. So what he did when he heard that people were criticizing, and there was one man who actually said to his wife, "I'm not going to accept you back. I'm not like Lord Ram who accepts his wife back." And it was a washerman, actually, who did that. And Lord Ram, in order to ascertain how his citizens felt, would sometimes go in disguise. Not only did he have spies everywhere, people worry about spies nowadays with this NSA thing, but Lord Ram would personally go and just like listen in and hear what people were saying about him. And when he heard from his spy that people were criticizing him, he personally went out to see if it was true. And when he heard it was true, then he became determined to send Sita Devi away. I mean, it's such a traumatic story. And, of course, Sita Devi was also pregnant. She says one should not become a king if they want to be a good householder. So anyway, Sita Devi was also pregnant with twins, who later became Lav and Kush. And Lord Ram was actually very depressed. If you read the Ramayana, he was extremely depressed, thinking of what he had to do. And he personally couldn't even do the act of sending Sita Devi away. He had to ask Lakshman to do it. And Lakshman, too, it was such a conflictual situation for Lakshman. When Lakshman was told, "You have to drop Sita Devi off in the forest." And Lakshman is just like, if you think about how he responded, and he just left her in the forest. And then Sita Devi, she was so dharmic that she just agreed to it. I mean, these are just like epitomes of dharma. Perfect examples of dharma. I mean, an ordinary woman, what would she have done? She said, "I'm not leaving here." She would have just come back to the kingdom and said, "That's it, That's it." And she would have made a court case against Lord Ram. Right? I mean, sued him for alimony or something like that. But Sita Devi was such a high caliber, she understood this point. And she went to the ashram of Valmiki Muni, and of course, you know the rest of the story. And so this is an example of how important it is for the king to actually perform his kingly duties, be concerned with the citizens, just like his children. And so this not only applies to a king, this applies to anybody who's taken a leadership position, a spiritual leadership position, perhaps in the Krishna Consciousness Movement, this applies to people like that. You know, all of us, you know, someone sannyasi or guru, or even parent. You know, because the statement by Lord Vrishabhadeva is no one should become guru or mother or father unless they're capable of free and they're dependent from the cycle of birth and death. And this means that they also, parents' duty is to also set a perfect example. Because if you don't, then the children will follow that imperfect example or horrible example, as the case may be, and they'll be lost. Lost from Vedic culture and lost from Krishna consciousness. So it is a great responsibility when you take responsibility for others. Otherwise, one should just remain a simple brahmachari, you know, wandering around in the Gopal and not take responsibility for others. Of course, even a brahmachari has responsibility. This is another point. When one joins the Krishna Consciousness Movement, one has responsibility for the reputation of the society. So if some devotee acts improperly, then that actually reflects on the whole society. You know, the newspapers generally will say, you know, Hare Krishna devotee killed so-and-so. They don't say that with a Christian. They don't say that with a Jewish person. They don't say Jewish person killed so-and-so. Somehow or other, you know, Hare Krishna devotee, were an easy target. So devotee, and like you see, like, I mean, I was just thinking about this, the things that occurred in New Vrindavan many, many years ago. It reflected on all of us. You know, caused a great lack of faith that many people on the outside had in the Krishna Consciousness Movement because of what happened there. You know, the actions of just two or three or four people reflected on all of us. So we have to think like that we all have a great responsibility. Even though we're not kings, and some of us may not be fathers, and some of us may not be sannyasis, but we have a great responsibility to act in such a way as to cause people to respect this Krishna Consciousness Movement rather than just negatively act in such a way as to avoid disrespect. So these are some of the points we can derive from this verse and Srila Prabhupada's purport. And in it's very heavy. This final portion of the purport is very heavy, where Vibhishan says this about, I mean, I didn't even remember this. I just read that. I should have read the verse this morning. And it's very heavy. Vibhishan said, you know, if I break my friendship with you, Lord Ramchandra, I will take birth either as a Brahmin or a Kshatriya in Kali Yuga. Doesn't say much about those who were born in Brahmin families. I mean, it's not that everybody born in Brahmin families is bad. It's not that, because there is a statement in the Bhagavatam that in Kali Yuga, demons will be born in Brahmin families. But it's not that every person born in Brahmin family is a demon. But many cases, it's like that. You can see they're preaching impersonalism or some bogus philosophy, even in so-called Brahmin families. So any questions or comments about these things? Yes, I did. His duty as when one takes, yes, his duty as, well, you can't really separate, because he also had a duty to set a good example of being a householder, too. So, but the duty of a king, in other words, you have to consider the majority of people just like your family. If you take the position of a king, you can't really consider that your wife is more important than someone else's wife. Everybody has to be considered equally at that particular point. I mean, that's a hard thing. I mean, I've seen in the past sometimes when devotees would take the position of temple president, that their wife would become like the you know, anyway, they would be partial to their wives. And it would create havoc in the temple. The wife would become like the queen. And it would be, can you imagine that? So, also this means that, I mean, actually another thing I was just thinking of that means that if one is, even if it's a guru, they can't, and they're members of the Krishna conscious movement, they can't consider their disciples more important than other people in the movement, because that creates a sectarian spirit. That's also bodily consciousness. That's an extended type of bodily consciousness. And I've been speaking about that, actually in Europe I was speaking about that, that where, you know, people have these different guru groups, and it actually divides our movement and displeases Prabhupada when people have these different guru groups, you know, my disciples and like that. And so the devotees, I mean, it's a very common thing in Europe, especially amongst the younger devotees, to have these like little guru cults. What can I say? I mean, it's, and I've been, you know, when I'm there, the devotees say, well, should we have a disciple meeting, you know, amongst my disciples? And I say, no, I don't want any such thing, because it creates a divisive atmosphere. If we have a meeting with the devotees, we should meet with all the devotees. You know, if we say, just my disciples, a disciple meeting, and I've seen it. But when some of the gurus do that, it creates actually a divisive mood in our movement. That, you know, I and mine, but actually all of us are followers of His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. So it's our responsibility when we have a position in the Krishna conscious movement, and a guru is a position in the movement, it's not just in relationship to your disciples, to actually consider everyone equally in the society. Not just your disciples are more important and you just like are partial to them. So this is important. So anyway, so be careful if you become king, you know. Of course, we don't have that problem of becoming king, but I mean, if one becomes temple president, they can't be partial. I mean, obviously they have to take care of their family. I'm not saying that they have to send their wife away or something like that to the forest, you know, the local forest. But still, there's that point that you really can't be partial. Like if there's some decision to be reached in the temple, let's say you're a temple president, there's some decision. You can't just be partial to your wife just because she's your wife. Or else it won't work. You know, it creates a real nepotetic, I'm inventing a word probably, but like a system of nepotism in the temple. I remember there was one temple president who said to the devotees that when I retire, I'm giving this temple to my children. You know, it's just like, we don't want that. We don't want this movement. Especially in position of leadership, it's very important not to be partial.